It's Tuesday, June 29th, 2021. I'm Cameron Weir, and welcome to TMI Daily, your daily roundup of everything people are talking about online, since they aren't allowed to talk about it in person. The NCAA Division I Council voted Monday to allow college athletes to profit off their name, image, and likeness without violating the NCAA's long-standing rules against student athletes being paid. This is sure to be a relief for all those Crimson Tide football players who will no longer have to memorize the particular rich relative that keeps giving them those new cars each season. Experts are claiming that structural damage caused by climate change may have contributed to last week's deadly Miami condo collapse. Given that most Republicans deny climate change exists, let's see how long it takes before they claim the building didn't collapse either. On his show last night, Tucker Carlson claimed that he was told that the NSA is spying on him, which begs the question, Tucker, can you really call it spying when all they have to do is tune into Fox News to see what a danger you are to the country? Buckingham Palace revealed that their staff is only 8.5% minorities, compared to 13% of the UK population. They said that they must do more, but when it comes to hiring people of color to literally wait on rich, entitled white people hand and foot, well, maybe you might actually want to do worse. Last night, Los Angeles Angels pitcher Dylan Bundy exited the game against the Yankees in the second inning after throwing up behind the mound. This is a welcome change for Angels fans who are usually the ones becoming violently ill during their own games. YouTube signed a naming rights deal for a 6,000-seat theater near Sophie Stadium. In lieu of a ribbon cutting, the venue will hold the world's biggest unboxing ceremony. The National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences apologized for showing the wrong photo during the Daytime Emmys in memoriam tribute to Marguerite Ray from The Young and the Restless. It's their response to her family's post-show threat to send whoever made the mistake straight to General Hospital. You know, like the show? No? Okay. John Langley, creator of the show Cops, has died of a heart attack while attending an off-road race in Mexico. Upon hearing the words death, cops, and race, Republicans were quick to blame the incident on Black Lives Matter or Antifa. Take your pick. F9 brought in a pandemic record $70 million at the U.S. box office between Friday and Sunday. As of now, we're not sure if this means that the motion picture industry is saved or if WWE Raw was only showing reruns last weekend. Kim Kardashian's Skims line has been named the official loungewear of the U.S. Olympic team. This marks the first time a Kardashian and an athlete have been mentioned together when it involves clothing being put on. Oh! Now let's send it over to tonight's TMI Daily cast and crew roundtable. Stay safe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of TMI Daily. I'm Veronica Aiello, and as always, I'm joined by some of my TMI Daily crew. Let's go around and say hello to everyone watching at home or listening to our TMI Daily podcast. Let's start with you, Pete.
I always enjoy watching Cameron like really sell one of the jokes because it leads me to believe he didn't think it was funny. And that really makes me feel good.
Elizabeth?
Hey, how's it going? It's Tuesday. Woo.
I got nothing for today.
That's it?
Yeah. Fucking tired.
Danny?
Hello, everybody. Happy Tuesday. Not many fun holidays out there, but it is National Waffle Iron Day. So if you have one, use it.
Waffle it up.
But you can also make waffle fries on irons.
You can make a whole bunch of waffles and then talk to your friends about how much you hate the illegals taking your jobs, and it'll be like being at Waffle House.
I was like, where is that going?
Oh, okay. It was going somewhere. I knew it was going to get there.
I had no idea where that was going, but now I know.
It got there.
And our very own Stew Dog.
Stew Dog!
How's it going, everybody? One thing you can't do with a waffle iron is take frozen tater tots and put them in a waffle iron to try to make waffle fries. That doesn't work.
Did you learn that the hard way, Stuart?
Yes.
Yes,
I did. It was disappointing. I mean, it was still fine, but it was disappointing.
And I also want to say that today was a very special day for me because ever since we moved 2 years ago, I could not find my BG shirt that I've had for over 30 years, and I found it today. So it's
you can hardly see it. Do you want to show it to everybody?
Yeah, it's right
there.
There
you go.
There you go. So I found it today after unpacking. after 2 years. Okay, so let's get started. Oh, before we start, actually, later on in the show, we're going to be joined by the host of the Could Be Worse podcast. So make sure you stay tuned for that. It's been a busy few days, so let's get caught up on the biggest news stories that happened while we were off with just one question. Yesterday, an NCAA council announced that they believe that student athletes should be allowed to profit off of their name, likeness, and image, which has been something college athletes have been asking for several decades. The NCAA board is meeting tomorrow to discuss if they should implement this. Since this is such a major development, I actually have two questions for you guys. My first question is, do you believe that college athletes should be paid? And then I'll ask you my second question. Let me just hear from some of you first. Let's start with you, Elizabeth, and then I'll go to Danny.
Generally, I would say no. But given that it is literally its own industry, basically, and other people make money off of them, at least when it, particularly when it comes to basketball and football, I'm going to say yes. Even though I don't like sports in school, I think, you know, it should be separate things. I academics matter, and that all sucks. But if you're going to profit off these guys the way they have been, then they should, you know, get compensated, especially because they truly don't prepare them for life after college with proper degrees, proper education. You know, the career is such a short-lived career. Sometimes you don't go past college with this sport. So I wouldn't normally, but I think this is kind of a weird case where I would say yes.
Okay. Danny, what do you think?
I agree with Elizabeth. They should be getting paid. They're providing some sort of entertainment, you know, and if you're in the pros, you get paid for that. But I would also hope that that would also lessen the number of high school kids that go straight into the pro leagues and stick around and actually get a college education, because they need something to fall back on. Most of them are not going to go, you know, that far in the pro leagues. So, but there is some gray area, because what about those who get scholarships for their athletic ability? You know, technically they are getting paid, you know, so I can see where the gray area is at.
And what about like less popular sports? Like, do you pay like volleyball players and things like that? And then the whole fair pay issue comes into play, but that's like a
so how do you determine problem. Who gets paid and what sport doesn't? I'm Stuart, and then I'll go to Pete. Go ahead, Stuart.
Well, touching on something just Elizabeth mentioned in passing, I don't think college sports should be a thing. I don't think it's good for college, and I don't think it's good for sports. In Europe, with soccer, and I mean, other around the world with soccer, they have academies. So when you're like a kid, you come up through like your local club's academy, and you take, you know, after school, you go practice, whatever, and then they have different divisions of professional sports. So like in England, the top one is the Premier League, and then they have the championship and then the League One and League Two. So when kids are like 16 or 17 and they're just starting off, just becoming able to sort of play with the older, like the best 17-year-olds are able to play with the older pros who aren't in the higher divisions, they get loaned to lower division clubs. And it basically, it takes away the education and separates it from the sport. So these kids are still getting education outside of whatever sport they're doing, but they're job as a 17-year-old is playing professional sports, and they also still have school. So it's sort of, there's no reason they need to be coupled together. Right. And it, like I said, I don't think it's good for sports, because then you run into what Danny was saying with, do they have to stay for all 4 years? Can they stay for 1 year? If you're making them stay for all 4 years, is it really fair to them? I mean, they put their bodies on the line. You don't know when you're going to get hurt. They don't, they only have a certain number of years where they're able to earn money, because, you know, the human body only has a certain peak physical condition for so long. Is it fair to expect them to do it for free? I'd say no. And then, like with Elizabeth, what also Elizabeth and Danny were saying was, what sports do we get? Do people get paid for? Like, should some guy on the water polo team get paid the same amount as the starting quarterback for an SEC team? Obviously not. They're not making the same amount of money. They're not generating the same amount of revenue. But they are both college athletes in the same organization. That's why I think it should be totally decoupled from college sports, but that's not going to happen. So yeah, I think that should be paid.
Yeah. Like, oh, I didn't know about the soccer model.
Yeah. The soccer model is great. They have different divisions. Yeah. And it's also great for localities because a smaller town still gets a team. It just doesn't play in a big league. So they get to still because a lot of what college sports is, it's a local, like, really camaraderie type thing.
Yeah.
If you went to that college, you have that thing. Whereas, like, there are like literally any town in England, there's a club, there's a football club.
Yeah.
Okay. Pete.
There's kind of a difference between, you know, being paid to be a student athlete and getting a scholarship, because I don't think that the colleges should be paying the students, the athletes to play. I mean, because I think that arbitrarily, if you're getting a scholarship and you're getting your room and board paid for, that is essentially paying you. But it's the stuff like the guy who ends up on next year's NCAA basketball game for the PlayStation, whose image is on the box and doesn't see a dime of it, but his school does. That's where the gray area is, because they're selling somebody's image based off the fact that they are a good player, and it obviously sells more games because you have certain players' images on those on those products. Something else I didn't realize until I started reading about this today is a lot of college athletes, not just, you know, it's funny when we're, I'm going to back up for a second. We're all saying, well, the bigger teams, the SEC football teams, the Big Ten football teams, the basketball teams that are always in the, you know, in the March Madness, like they would have the players that you would probably see getting paid because they're more recognizable. But strangely enough, because of social media, I read this great article about how so many college athletes have huge online followings, like on Instagram, and they were equating them to other people who have Instagram accounts that are getting paid to do it.
Oh.
And like they're athletes. I mean, it's like there's a field hockey player, I think in Connecticut, who has something like 600,000 followers. And if she was selling, you know, like posts the way that somebody who has 600,000 posts was, you know, 600,000 followers was doing, she'd be making somewhere in the realm of like, you know, $5,000, $10,000 a month doing that. And so there is that gray area where, you know what, maybe if they're able to actually be entrepreneurial enough to build their own following, then yeah, they should have the ability to go out and actually make money off of it. And so, yeah, I mean, the problem is when you see these big athletes, the bigger the athlete is, the more they're getting under the table anyway. I mean, if there's a whole Twitter account that just puts up pictures of student athletes with their fancy cars, and you could see from most of these cars, these guys did not buy these cars themselves, you know. And it's like, so I guess in a way, this is almost like legalizing marijuana, because the more you legalize something, the less illegal things are going to be done, you know, in that vein, I guess. So yeah, I mean, the schools, no, they should not pay. But if their images are being used, or if they're able to build their following, they should get paid for it.
So let me ask you this before I go to Stuart, my second question. So if they are to get paid, then do you think it's going to change the sports in a dramatic way, college sports, and how so? Pete, go ahead. Why don't you piggyback on that, and then we'll go to Stuart.
I think that it'll definitely change it for one main reason. There's going to be a lot of haves and have-nots. You know, like on a team that might be like a national championship contending team in any sport, there's always going to be that higher echelon of players, those guys that are all American quality, that are Heisman quality, like in football, that kind of thing. But even some of the lower tier players say, well, I could probably still go in the 12th round or 14th round of a draft. But if all of a sudden you're on a team with a guy that has, you know, 1.5 million followers on Instagram because somebody did a story about him in Sports Illustrated, and he's clearing, you know, 22,000, 25,000 a month from his followers, you're probably going to see some level of jealousy from other players who are going to look at it like, this isn't the same thing as being successful, you know, on the field. This is being successful in some other way. And that might change the way we look at these athletes. And also, I think the fact that they'd be getting paid loses some of the purity, the whole love of the game aspect that the media likes to push forward when it comes to college athletics. I mean, like, because we think of these players as playing for the pride first and then for the contract next. And that probably wouldn't be the same thing once they get paid for it.
Mm-hmm. Stuart?
Well, I agree that college sports would change. There would definitely be haves and haves nots if it was only your likeness was the way they're getting paid, but if they're also just allowed to sign contracts to be paid by the colleges, then that would create more of a parity where they would have probably a salary cap and just structure it like a regular sports league, which I don't think is going to happen, but that's how you solve the haves and haves nots problem, to make it just more a parity and have, you know, a players union, all that. As for college scholarships, I don't consider those compensation. They're coupons. So I don't think that, I mean, I think that's a common argument used that, oh, that's, they're getting paid by the colleges for scholarships, but they can't pay rent in scholarships. The scholarship is not really worth anything in their regular life. Period. Like any at all.
But what is their regular life though, Stuart? I mean, the regular life is somewhere to live. That's paid for. The regular life is eating. That's paid for.
No, not necessarily.
If you're an elite athlete, you know, but if you are one of the elite athletes and you get the full ride, you do get all that taken care of.
You don't necessarily get dining privileges. A lot of scholarships don't include that. There have been documented cases of notable college athletes being like, yeah, I had to skip a meal. And then also, you know, yes, a place to live, room and board. But, you know, I think there's a whole that their education, the education they're getting is valuable when really it's only valuable because the college says it's valuable. So if the college wants to get a really good player, they say, oh, our education is more valuable. There's really no inherent value in whatever the classes they're getting from the education.
Okay, Elizabeth?
Yeah, I was just going to touch on the love of the game thing on like losing the purity. Well, yeah, sure. But also the purity was lost when everybody but the athletes doing the work was making money off of it. That's the shitty part, especially for the, you know, most of those guys, you know, it's just so many of them have financial problems after they leave. And like I said, they don't really, you know, the education being provided is really not, even at like a top school with like quote unquote good education, they're not really getting, like I said, anything to prepare them for after they basically serve their purpose, and then they just kind of get kicked out into the world. And the degree is kind of useless. They didn't maybe have the greatest grades, but they did okay to quote unquote stay on the team. And if they don't go pro, which a lot of them don't, you know, it's that thing gets narrower and narrower further you go. It's all these young people basically being used for entertainment, and then when we're done with them, we're done with them. And that's the shitty part.
Okay, let's finish off this topic with Danny. Go ahead, Danny.
And depending who's paying, you'll probably also see the prices and tickets go up. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's going to end up hitting our pocketbooks because, you know, big schools like, say, USC, UCLA, who have, you know, top contenders every year in a lot of the sports, are going to want to raise their ticket prices, you know, since, you know, their athletes are getting it done, you know. So, and since collegiate games tend to be more affordable than pro games, you know, that's definitely going to hurt the pocketbook for some people.
I just want to ask Stuart, you seem to disagree with that. I think
ticket prices are already very expensive, particularly for bigger colleges that have a lot of like fans and a lot of alumni. I don't know what percentage, but a good percentage of fans at the sporting events are students. And I know that as someone who, you know, relatively recently was at an age where you're looking into colleges, a lot of people consider their college sports teams and that environment as a factor in deciding what college to go to, which is another reason why I think sports should be decoupled from college, because tailgating was also a factor in people making the decision where they went for their college education, which is to me ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. So we'll definitely keep an eye on and see where this goes. So F9 Fast and Furious sequel made a pandemic record $70 million at the US box office. $70 million might be amazing coming out of the pandemic, but compared to the fate of the Furious, which made $99 million in its first weekend, or even a movie like Jordan Peele's Us, which came out in March of 2019 with a $71 million box office, $70 million in normal times is really not that impressive. So my question to you is, Last month, we asked our panel to think like a studio executive, and all of us said that F9 was going to be the biggest box office hit of the summer. If a $70 million opening is the best studios can hope for, should they once again push back their biggest films to either late in the year or 2022? Let's start with you, Danny.
We're not in normal times yet. There's still, you know, a lot of people not going to the movie theaters because there is a variant out there that seems to be a little bit more catchy, you know, so people are being more guarded now. So I think $70 million is something to applaud. You know, it might be the biggest debut of the summer. You don't know. The summer's just starting. There's still a lot to go.
Okay, Pete?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. It's admirable that they made $70 million, but the problem is it's a business like anything else. And if you think that this was the movie with the highest brand recognition coming out over the next 3 months that isn't also going through a streaming service at the same time, because you could probably say the same thing with Black Widow. But if you think that this was that movie and this is the best they were going to do right now, then maybe they should consider moving back films, because there's no pride and ownership kind of thing in saying, oh yeah, well, in a pandemic, we still made $70 million. $70 million is almost $30 million less than the last movie made in a non-pandemic. And so maybe it's just smart for them to say, you know what, we can't fight the science. Let's move ourselves these movies back either to later in the fall or maybe in the winter or even next year. Because it just doesn't make sense for a lot of these films to come out now when there's still people that will not go to a movie theater. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's common sense at this point. So being the first tenant or being the biggest movie to come out in the new reality, that's not something you're going to hang your hat on when you have a $250 million budget to pay off.
Okay, Elizabeth, and then I'll go to Stuart. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
And it was just announced today that the DGA is going to require a 7-day, like, in theater screening run. I think right after your release date, which really fucks over the day and date, you know, at home and in theater releases. And so, like, movies like Dune that were kind of counting on being both a big, like, spectacle movie and possibly gain awards are totally screwed by that now. So I'm kind of wondering if they, based on that, at least if things kind of continue to not really open up and the variant stuff gets worse, I think anything that's towards the end of summer and going into fall will probably get pushed further into the new year. And I agree with Danny, it's a little early to tell because it's only middle of summer, but F9 was kind of the biggest thing that was going to come out brand-wise. You know, In the Heights was kind of hurt by this, even though, you know, people liked it a lot. It definitely didn't make a ton of money by any stretch. And the shitty part with that is, like, people are going to be like, oh, I guess no one wants to see Latinos. Well, that's not true. We're still in the pandemic. People still don't want to go. It was released at home, so it's not really a great gauge of how well it actually did. Yeah. So,
and it's also, it wasn't, we just watched it this past weekend.
Finally, it's a traditional
summer movie. That movie would have been so much better served if they had just pushed it all the way back to December, you know, and then either released it just in theater or released it both theater and HBO Max at that point. Because now the fact that it got hurt at the box office, it's probably going to hurt its chances to win awards next year. Yeah. And the movie literally does deserve at least some consideration, and it's probably not going to get it because of where it got dumped into the schedule. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it is a shame because it was absolutely I absolutely loved it, and I saw the theater version of it with Lin-Manuel, and I have to say that the movie was a lot better than the theater version. So yeah,
it's only $70 million, but it has made over $400 million
internationally. Yeah.
You know, so that's nothing to, you know, frown about.
Mm. Stuart.
So a couple things. One, I think that we're right in the sense that the movies aren't going to be making nearly as much as they would if they were pushed back. I'm not sure that pushing them back makes the most fiscal sense, because at a certain, like, they're still in production for movies right now. So at a certain point, you're just pushing and pushing back. And so you only have a limited number of time to release movies. You have X amount of movies that you have that need to be released. You're making more. At a certain point, it's just sunk cost fallacy not to release them. You might as well recoup what you can.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not like there aren't gaps in their schedule. So I think it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense for them to push them back financially, because I think it is just make what you can now, or you're just gonna keep pushing back indefinitely, because because there's only a certain number of release space and that's already taken up.
But Stuart, what you're saying though, you're not kind of taking into effect the domino effect that, like, if a movie that they spent $150 million on to produce only brings in $200 million, and then when costs and everything else, it takes a write-off of $100 million, that does affect the movie that might be made next year that won't get made because they didn't have the money for it, because they pushed the movie out when they shouldn't have. You know,
right now they're not making any money in theaters. Well, if they don't release the money, they make zero money.
They make zero money
versus the $50 million if they like so Fast should have made 150 million.
Yeah, they made
70.
Yeah, it should.
That's better than zero. That's my point. At this point,
better than zero is not enough right now. Right now,
but it's the best they're going to do. That's the difference. Keeping the pushing back is just a classic example of the sunk cost fallacy that's just going to keep them spiraling, and they're never going to recover. They just got to eat their losses. That's what they got to do now, and that's what they're going to do. Take the hit.
So structural engineers in Miami are saying that climate change helped lead to the horrific collapse of the condo in Surfside, Florida. So my question is, considering that the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, is a staunch ally of Donald Trump and also a climate denier, will Florida be able to keep other buildings safe if they can't even admit to things that caused this horrific tragedy? And I mean, it is horrific. I don't know if you've been, keeping up with the stories.
It's bad.
It's heartbreaking. Every time I watch it on the news, it's terrible. Elizabeth.
No, audio, I think from a 911 or just radio transmissions, people, whoever it was, the workers, whoever doing the rescue stuff, compared it to 9/11 as far as like tower collapse and just inability to find and locate people. It's not just climate stuff though. It's the overall infrastructure of the entire country is at risk. Again, not just from climate, but just from wear and tear over time. And we have not invested in that. Like, talk about that would get like job stuff going again for people. Bridges and roads. There's been a lot of bridge collapses, There were multiple warnings about this building, like several years, like 3 years ago, and even a few months ago. I think they just said in the last couple of days that people did say, "Hey, it needs like the whole parking structure under the building needed a lot of like reinforcement or something like that." It's the overall just infrastructure of the country is really teetering on the edge. And that's where, a lot of money and focus should go, but, shit gets blocked all the time.
Yeah. Stuart, and then I'll go to Pete.
Yeah, I mean, I think Elizabeth hit the nail on the head. When was the last big infrastructure nationwide overhaul? I mean,
50, I think.
Eisenhower, highways, I think it was Eisenhower.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, even though we're using steel, concrete, and all that, that's like 60 years ago. Stuff's just going to start breaking. That's how it works. Stuff doesn't last forever. Things are just going to start breaking, and unless you fix them. And the gridlock in politics is not fixing anything. Stuff's just going to keep collapsing. Bridges are just going to fall down, buildings, and it's unfortunate, but it's kind of surprising that hasn't happened more already.
Yeah. Pete, go ahead.
Yeah, and I agree with both of what Elizabeth and Stu Dog said. What really hurts right now is that, like, Biden's going to go down there on Thursday, and he's going to visit with some of the survivors, and he's going to be there with DeSantis, who clearly hates him, and everything else. And the problem is going to be that right now Biden's on a tour to sell his infrastructure plan, And the second he walks out, you know, away from that site and says, this is a perfect example of why we need to fix our infrastructure, the Republicans are all going to scream, see, he's politicizing this story. Mm-hmm. And then and that'll be the story instead of the fact that he's right, that this is exactly the reason why, you know, why we need to fix the infrastructure.
And why he's trying to do something about it. Exactly.
And it's like, you know, and the thing is, look, it's not about whether or not he's, you know, he's got this huge heart and he wants to do it because he thinks it's better for the country. He knows it's going to create a lot of jobs. The more jobs it creates, the better the economy gets. And that's all well and good. If the end result is still helping people both with the infrastructure and with jobs, then who cares how we got to it?
It's a win-win, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I think our guests are here, so let's bring them on. So what happens when you combine writers with comedians? Well, that might actually explain TMI Daily. It's also a good definition of the podcast could be worse, as the show is hosted by writer Tyler Lozier and comedian Dom Antos. Much like us, they use humor to discuss current events, politics, and pop culture. Please welcome Tyler and Dom to TMI Daily. Hi, guys. How are you doing today?
I'm good.
How are you guys?
Thanks for having us on.
We're doing well. Thank you so much. So, guys, could you please tell us a little bit about your podcast, Could Be Worse?
Yeah, sure. We're mostly, I guess you call it, improv comedy podcast. We do current events, conspiracy theories, pop culture, pretty much anything you'd see on Twitter or any kind of social media platform. Just stuff that happens in our day-to-day lives. It's mostly like blue humor, dark humor. Not something you want to play around your mom and dad, but yeah. It's a good time. We try to have fun with it. So
yeah, definitely heavy on the cynicism.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. What was that?
No, I just said it's definitely heavy on the cynicism, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I was saying is you definitely fit right in with us. So what inspired you guys to start your podcast? Like, how did the idea come about?
I can't really speak too much for Dom, but my life was pretty miserable at the time. I was producing a podcast professionally for a company that definitely does not want me name dropping them on here. And it was a political company. The last podcast I produced professionally was for a current governor, a former governor, and a former presidential candidate. And I think at the time, senator candidate. So now I produce with Dom, who works at his mom's restaurant and stretches out old ladies in his free time. So, and the saddest part of that is I consider it a massive, massive step up from.
Oh, it's a big step up. Don't worry. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're doing much better now. Trust me.
Great. Great to hear. So let me ask you this, since you guys, you know, co-host the podcast together. Yeah. Do you both share the same beliefs and ideologies, and is there anything you disagree with each other about? Are there certain topics that you just cannot agree on?
I feel like a lot of things we definitely have in common. But anything we don't agree on, it'll just turn into some sort of funny riff instead, you know? Mm-hmm. We'd never get too serious where we'd have to yell at each other or anything like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think like a big thing for us is that like we have a similar sense of humor. So where we land on like any particular issue, I think is not irrelevant, but you know, if he takes one side, I'll take the other. Like it's not serious enough where we draw a line in the sand, like Dom said, and said, no, I believe this. Like we don't get too serious. So, you know, if he says something and it sounds like, oh, it could be funny to come at it like this way or that way and kind of, you know, throw a wrench in it somehow, we just do whatever's funniest, I think.
Yeah.
We're not married to any ideology.
We entertain ourselves first, and then if it's funny to other people, then we go with that.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. That always seems to work.
Yeah.
So these last few years, you've seen some pretty horrible world events. How are you able to find the funny in stories like that, in pretty terrible, depressing stories?
Well, I think, I mean, personally, like, you know, the last year or so, I think for a lot of people, it's been pretty terrible and depressing. So if you didn't find a way to laugh at it, you're, you know, probably on Twitter, like arguing with people for 8 hours a day. So if you want to stay sane, you want to stay like happy in some way, I feel like you got to find a way to laugh about it. And like I said, like nothing's so serious for us that like, it's like sacred or off limits. So, we kind of like gravitate, I think, towards like dark and depressing things. And that's maybe we're just fucked up people. I don't know, but, we do.
There's a high chance of that.
Yeah, we do just like to kind of go down the rabbit hole and see like if there's a way to make all that really, because I think that's like what being good at comedy is like being able to make really, really fucked up things palatable and interesting, entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you think with this last year that we've had, you know, like you just mentioned, you know, it was pretty, you know, sad. Yeah. Do you think Americans are in the mood to start laughing soon? Or do you think it's going to be hard to get Americans laughing again? I'm just talking about our own country here. What do you think about that?
Definitely on TV, it's been getting worse and worse. You know, the comedy has gotten, I personally think, definitely worse. But I think people are definitely ready to start laughing again. I think dark humor definitely will start getting back to that. Just because, you know, everyone's life has taken a bit of a downturn, you know. Mm-hmm. But I feel confident that it'll come back strong.
I think there'll be a real rebound, kind of adding to that. Like, I just think people are getting tired of seeing like Stephen Colbert like cry on late night. Yeah. And there's this real like issue, I think, right now, especially with late night comedy, of like being right versus being funny. Like being funny is, you're very rarely like right when you're funny. It's usually like, wouldn't it be funny if this was true? Or like, let's look at this from a weird fucked up angle. If you're just saying things like racism is bad, it's like, yeah, that's true. But it's not really a joke. So I think like the average person, I hope, is getting kind of sick of movies, TV, comedy, music, everything kind of sucking, which I think for the last couple of years is a kind of a fair way to put it. And hopefully there's kind of a rebound and things kind of, catch their stride again. If for no other reason, then I need something new to watch on Netflix.
Yeah, right, please.
So let me open it up to the panel. Does anybody have any questions for Tyler and Dom? Let's start with you, Elizabeth.
Favorite conspiracy theory?
Ooh, Ty loves.
That's like asking a mother her favorite child.
Yeah, that was a great first question.
Man.
Wow.
I think QAnon might be my favorite, not because it's the most believable, but it's just
He's lying.
Unhinged. It's like there's something that's so fascinating to me about people who just completely check out of reality to that level and then are willing to just burn bridges with friends, family, coworkers, bring it up at Christmas, bring it up at Thanksgiving, happy hour at work. It doesn't matter. These people are very, very open about the whole QAnon thing. So there's just something that to be that like unashamed about being a lunatic is fascinating to me.
And it's super telling about our society too here that QAnon gets huge and big, but like ones that are actually believable, like Epstein, 9/11, all this other stuff is, you know, still not really talked about as much, you know?
Yeah.
But Q drops are the big thing. You know?
They're very popular. That's for sure.
Yeah. All you got to do is tweet a capital Q and everyone loses their mind.
That's like McAfee died the other week. And I think he pulled probably the greatest, like, death prank you could pull is he just posted right as he died like a Q just in Times New Roman on his Instagram feed and it was immediately deleted and the internet went crazy. They're like, he's got a dead man switch, it's all coming, this is it, this is the reckoning, Q was right. And then of course nothing happens, but it's fun to just you know, fuck with those people who, like I said, are so invested in this wild conspiracy.
I watched that documentary on HBO and I was like, I can't believe we were almost brought down by this fucking turd guy and his turd son. Like,
I know.
Like, God damn it. Like, really? That's all it took was these two fucking assholes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Come it was on. Frightening easy. Our country just went right down the shitter in like a year.
Yeah.
You'd like to think we're a little bit more resilient. You know, the founding fathers, you know, smart guys built the Constitution is a wonderful document. And then like a bunch of guys dress up like Vikings and run into Nancy Pelosi's office. And it's like, we're on the brink all of a sudden. So you'd like to think there's a little bit more, the plane can handle a little bit more turbulence than that, but I guess we'll see what happens.
Pete?
I'm just wondering, because we do a lot of comedy as well. And, you know, I see a real affinity between what you do and what we do, because a lot of the stuff that we find funny might be a little bit dark to other people.
Yeah.
You guys ever like have, you know, individually or together, have a moment where you're thinking something that you find so funny, but you know it's so dark that I just should keep my mouth shut and not say it?
Because
if I say it, somebody's going to get a little pissed off.
No, sir. It's funny, honestly. I'll get texts from people that listen to it, and the darkest, dirtiest jokes we do, that's the hits. That's their favorite, you know? So I don't know. And these are people, you know, 9 to 5 jobs in offices working in HR, but you know, they like our Catholic priest, you know, jokes, you know? So it's
yeah.
funny.
Yeah, and what Dom said definitely rings true. Like I so many times will say something, and cause like we like to have an environment like me and Dom, you know, we've been friends for a long time. So, yeah. We're very comfortable with each other. We edit our podcast too. It's not live. So we kind of have this thing of like, just say it. And if it's that bad, we'll cut it afterwards.
Right.
But a lot of the times, like like Dom said, like I made one joke. I think I was ripping on a homeless woman, that plays violin by my house. And I made the joke, and I was running out of material. It was punching down, like the definition of punching down. And I felt bad about the joke, but Dom was like, keep it in, keep it in, keep it in. And that was the joke that week that people were texting me. My mom texted me. She's like, that was really funny. And I was like, I thought you would be angrier, but I guess that's why I am how I am.
Right. Makes sense.
Danny.
With that being said, what do you think of the cancel culture we live in right now?
I'm waiting for someone to cancel us.
Please. Oh, yeah.
Please
what are you gonna
send
do?
It around. Send it to everyone you know. Tell them how mad you are. Just share it all over. Retweet it on Twitter. I'm begging to be canceled. It should be great promo.
I work 2 jobs. I'd love to be canceled.
He'll get more free time.
Yeah, work on my jump shot. You know, relax a little bit. I'd work. I'd do that.
I mean, it's hard to go viral these days. I mean, everyone is on TikTok. Everyone's on Instagram. Everyone's on Twitter. We had a teacher in our high school, who was, fired and arrested for trying to molest one of her students, and she went viral on TikTok.
Oh,
so,
yeah, she was big.
I mean, how are we supposed to compete with that? We need a little push from somebody getting upset or something so we can finally get these numbers up.
Sorry, viral for like, what? How did she go viral on TikTok?
Hey, any publicity is good publicity, right?
Like defending herself? Or,
yes.
Or,
yes.
Oh,
she hosted.
Oh, this is good. She set up an entire like, what was it? A group Zoom?
It was a group Zoom. There was hundreds of people. Anyone who was ever not only a student of hers but a student at the high school could email
like alumni,
her.
Yeah.
And apply to be in this Zoom call. And she gave like, I think it was a 2-3 hour presentation, not about why she didn't or how she didn't do it. Not about, you know, how the facts or the context was off, but about why it was okay for her.
Yeah. Oh, no. Oh,
not good.
No,
not good.
She was engaged. Imagine getting cucked by her.
And they're still engaged. Get this. They're still engaged. She cheated on her husband with a 17-year-old student, and they're like getting married next year, I think.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
Wow. Oh, man.
So please cancel. Because that's the only way we're ever going to top that.
Yeah, she got more views than us. So what does that say?
Yeah. Get her as a guest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you should. You should get her on as a guest.
Don't tempt us. We will. Well, I have her email still. So.
Oh, it wouldn't be too hard. That's the show. No.
Yeah. Any more questions for Tyler and Dom? Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Out of curiosity, I know you were saying you didn't love a lot of the way comedy has been the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because some of it is like borderline just too serious? Like I really liked the Bo Burnham special, but that's not exactly like a laugh out loud thing while at the same time being very funny, but very insightful. I guess it's two pronged. Is there a comedy that you have enjoyed from like the past couple years? And what, like, is there a specific thing you haven't liked?
Right. I feel like Bo Burnham, at least it's clearly artistic, clearly like there's talent behind it. Whereas some stuff like you watch The Daily Show or something like that, it's no different than the news at this point. The jokes aren't even funny, you know, it's as corny as if you're watching CNN or Fox or whatever, you know?
Yeah. So, I have a real issue with being lectured to by clowns. It's a weird dynamic where it's like, you know, comedy's fun, it's an awesome thing, but like I don't understand how that like the public intellectual space and like comedy like joined together and became this one sort of like living, breathing entity. I just feel like I was saying before that you know, the people who have done the best over the last year and really made the most of comedy in this incredibly dark time, I think are people like Tim Dillon and stuff like that, people who really leaned into the darkness and said, yeah, you know, it looks like it's going down, so let's have one last laugh before it's all over. Yeah. And that was something that I really gravitated to, because I mean, you know, my family's been a magnet for tragedy throughout our lives. And like from a young age, I was learned to either laugh or cry when something horrible happens. And so like the laughing is always the one that I've chose. And when comedians get really serious and really earnest and almost like patronizing in some cases, yeah. I just feel like it's like, this may be good. This would be a fantastic TED talk, but I don't know if it's like,
right,
at least the comedy that I like. And I'm sure it's better than they're doing better than us. So, I mean, what do we know? But, I like people who embrace the darkness and who try to challenge themselves to make it, to funny. You know, and instead of just going like, okay, well, this is the safe kind of sanitized approved viewpoint, so let's just say this in an interesting way or something like that.
Yeah. And then that creates like kind of the even farther, you know, extent where it's almost some of the stuff's too dark, you know, because when you have stuff that's constantly, you know, washed down, the inverse, you know, happens where, you know, the comedy gets a little too far as well, you know, on like Twitter, parts of the internet.
Yeah.
Do you have another question?
Yeah, no, I've asked this of other people who do comedy on podcasts. So I figured I might as well throw this one out there to you guys too. Now that Trump is not the focal point of every moment of our day, do you think that hurts comedy a little bit, or are we okay with that not being the case
anymore? No, I think that is the best thing that could happen is for him to just fall off a cliff somewhere and we never hear about him again. Because on one level, like also like that's what he likes, is he likes being the center of attention. So if you don't like him, talking about him 24/7 is the worst thing you can do. But just like there's like 10 jokes about Trump, two of which maybe are funny, and we've heard them all 100 times over the last year. So, I mean, take shots at Biden. He's an easy target. There's tons of politicians you could rip on both sides of the aisle, you know, depending on what your leanings are. And I just think there's better targets, and it's done. It's kind of hack at this point. So everyone has a Trump impression. Very few of them are good. So I think it's a good thing that he's hopefully moving far, far away from the spotlight.
Yeah. We don't have to listen to any more Orange Man bad jokes. No.
Right. Right.
We hope so. Yeah. So guys, before you go, how often do you release some episodes?
We do every week. This Saturday, we're going to be off for 4th of July. Our schedule's all crazy. But the following Saturday, we will be back to every Saturday, midnight Eastern time, give or take. Sometimes I'm a little late with it, but we try to get it out first thing Saturday, so it's there when people wake up.
Yeah.
And you're found on all podcast streaming platforms, right?
Yeah. You can find us online at thecouldbeworsepodcast.com, and we'll have all the links up there. So Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you can just click which one you want to listen on. You can follow us on Twitter at the CBW Pod. We try to post all the links and stuff and the episodes when they come out there as well. So either of those places are great places to start.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. And come back anytime you want to come on and just, you know, talk with us and have a chat with us.
Thanks a lot for having us.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for having us on. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks for having us, guys. Take care.
Come on, guys.
Have a good night.
Bye. Good night.
Bye.
Okay, guys. So before we move on to our final segment, there's one thing that wasn't in our notes, but that I kind of want to talk a little bit about with all of us here, since we're all in Los Angeles. So I don't know if you've been seeing the news, but it's pretty much everywhere now where they're saying that LA County is now recommending that everyone start wearing their masks indoors again. So what are your thoughts on that? And I know all of us here, you know, are responsible. We haven't been opposed to wearing our masks. But the reason I wanted to talk about this too is because, so yesterday, Pete and I ate out for the first time since March of 2020. We had not been to a restaurant. Well, we went to like a little hut the other day in Malibu, but it wasn't really like a restaurant. Like, we just got our food and just ate like in a little picnic area. So yesterday was our first day out, and you know, we ordered at a counter, but we actually had outdoor dining where they actually brought the food out to us, and we, you know, talked with, you know, the bus boy and everything. So to me, it was just kind of like, I was kind of feeling good about it. And Pete was like, you know, like, I don't understand what the big deal is. But for me, it was a big deal. And then I'm supposed to see some friends on Saturday to do outdoor dining, you know, some more. But now I'm reading all this and it's giving me a little bit of anxiety. So like, What's going on here? What are your thoughts on this, Elizabeth?
Yeah, I'm a little, you know, anxious as well. Because I just went back to the office and like we're supposed to wear your mask. Luckily, there's like not that many people in my office, but you were supposed to wear your mask, even, you know, if people are around. Then that sort of lifted, but sort of didn't. If you vouched that you were vaccinated, and not just like said it, like they kind of wanted to know like where you've been vaccinated and a few more details. Then they were like, it's okay to not wear your mask. But that was only in the office. When I'm on the studio set, everybody still has to be all masked up, you know, limiting who's in what rooms and things like that. So I was sort of like, well, I thought we were open, but I guess we're not. It's just like stricter policy within that. I have gone to some theater things now, movie theater things for screenings and some indoor dining, and I've worn my mask inside for basically all of that just out of abundance of caution. So yeah, I just saw something kind of before we started that said, yes, the Delta variant does spread quicker, but they have not determined if it makes you sicker than just regular COVID. That's not good either way, right? Like, you don't want it faster, even if it's not as bad. But there is like some kind of like, you know, not silver lining, but sort of like, well, even if it goes faster, maybe it's at least sort of the same, but not worse.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm definitely getting a little anxious. I'm like, I don't know. So even being vaccinated and like LA opening up and you can go places without a mask if you're not vaccinated, anywhere that was public, like, you know, grocery stores, anything that I wasn't doing with people I knew in like a known like entity type location, I still wore a mask and still will.
Well, and I think too, it's like also conflicting stories that you hear. You know, some people say, you know, I was reading last night, you know, they're saying, oh, it affects people mostly that, you know, obviously that are not vaccinated.
Right.
We all are here on screen. But then I was also reading, you know, it affects younger people. And then, you know, we talked to a friend yesterday and she's like, oh, did you hear it's affecting people that terribly, even if they've been vaccinated.
So yeah.
There's so many conflicting, you know, news stories that I don't know what to believe in.
It feels back to square one, I think is the problem.
That's what I told Pete today. That's why I was so frustrated.
Because we're almost
square one again. Are we going to be locked down again? Are we going to, you know?
It's almost like we're back to March 2020 where you only have to spend 2 weeks, but do wear the mask, but don't wear the mask, you know, but you can do this if you have to. That's the frustrating part is like we had a plan for a while that was going good.
Yeah.
And then it seemed like it was going good enough that we could maybe go, you know, back, quote unquote, to normal, or at least, you know, loosen things up. But now maybe we can't do that, but we don't have a clear answer of why and how we can't do that just yet. And that's the...
Exactly. Let me go to Danny and then I'll go to Stuart. Go ahead, Danny.
It all comes down to your level of comfort, you know. I haven't stopped wearing a mask. I work in the healthcare setting. So we're exempt from the no mask mandate. We still have to wear it everywhere we go, you know, for the protection, not just of ourselves, but of our patients as well. I have gone to, you know, restaurants now and indoor, I feel comfortable enough indoors.
So do you keep the mask on while you're in there? And then when the food comes, you take it off or you just take off the mask?
The places I have gone to, I've been, you know, a little hole in the walls.
Okay.
You know, I met up with a couple friends on Saturday to watch the Clippers game, just, you know, to get out the house and have a couple drinks. But we went to a local dive bar, which I knew would not be as packed as they going to Rock and Brews, you know, just because you don't want to be around that many people still. At least I don't.
Yeah.
I had friends that have been like to Knott's Berry Farm this past weekend and, you know, they were like the only ones wearing a mask in line, you know, and that's just because you kind of get that paranoia again. Like, you don't want to get sick. You just want to be safe. And why not? You know, that's the whole point. You want to be safe, wear the mask. You know, vaccines are not 100% effective. You know, there's still that slight possibility. So better safe than sorry.
Yeah. Stuart, and then I'll go to Pete.
Go ahead, Stuart. So I've been going maskless. Since I was fully vaccinated, I've been wearing maskless whenever I am allowed to, because the vaccines are very effective and there's still not really an indication that they're ineffective against Delta. I mean, they're still pretty, I think it's slightly less effective, but they're still very effective. I think I agree with Elizabeth saying where it does feel like going backwards and back to square one. And one thing that does concern me is, I think what was reaffirmed throughout this whole COVID process of, you know, the different states having different rules, that it really shouldn't be coming from the individual states and individual municipalities. It should be the CDC decides ultimately, because A, that even though like LA's demographics and like population density is different than South Dakota, the CDC can still have X amount of people per you know, square mile, or like X amount of cases per X amount of people. And it's really frustrating when there is multiple different things coming out. Like the World Health Organization yesterday recommended that fully vaccinated people still wear masks. Now, does that cover all fully vaccinated people? Or is it just for certain vaccines? Because the Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca, which are approved by World Health Organization, are significantly less effective, just period, than the Pfizer Moderna. And then the CDC says you don't need to wear a mask if you're fully vaccinated. And then, of course, there are people who are still refusing to get vaccinated. And then there are kids who I believe that the Delta variant is being more is infecting kids more. I don't think it's very deadly for them at all yet. I think it's not like it's like a cold, still like a flu-like symptoms for kids mostly, but I think it is more effective at infecting kids who can't get the vaccine yet if you're under 12. So that's obviously very concerning. But yeah, it's really frustrating that there isn't clear communication. And I think also going back to what I was saying before, where if you are going to go backwards and reinstitute mask mandates, you need a good reason. Because at this point, if masks are mandated to prevent the spread of the vaccine, but vaccines aren't, I start to question why. At a certain point, if we're going to go back into a shutdown, either make people get vaccinated or say, fuck it, you're on your own. So that's sort of where I am at this point, where if you're going to make, I mean, I guess like a good guideline to have is, you know, like wearing masks can't hurt. It does hurt communication. I don't feel as good when I'm out wearing a mask than I do when I'm not wearing a mask. It does affect my mood and affects how I feel. Mm-hmm. But like I was saying, I think forcing people to wear masks and not forcing people to get vaccinated doesn't sit right with me, because I think one is very effective at preventing, like, I mean, 99.98% of deaths from COVID this year have been in unvaccinated people in America. And if you're, and I mean, that's incredible, but if you're not going to get vaccinated, at a certain point, I kind of want to spread COVID to you because you're just an idiot. I mean, and I know it sounds terrible, but it really, I'm at this point where it's like, you know, I'm at a point in my life where I should be, you know, in my prime. And if I'm going to have to wear a mask again while other people could just not get vaccinated, I'm really starting to get upset about it, to be honest.
I totally agree with that, Stuart. Like, I understand that, because that's exactly what I say as well.
If I'm always, you know, follow the science. And if the science says we need to wear masks again, okay. I've been not wearing masks. I'm going to start wearing it again because LA says so. And 50% of the cases in LA are Delta. That's concerning to me. But I also think at a certain point, you can't just mandate masks. You have to mandate something that is much more effective at preventing COVID, which is vaccines. They're way better at preventing you from getting COVID than masks, and keeping you safe than masks. Like, and that's like, masks offer very little protection to the person. That's always been the case. And that's why people start double masking, because that offers more personal protection to you.
But I also, before I go to Pete though, by doing it, that'll never happen, because we do live in the land of the free.
You can't have
people to inject something into their body. Like, I mean, you can't even get
it from that. But like I said, at a certain point, you know, if it comes time, you know, if they want to put us basically in another, you know, lockdown like they did last March because of Delta, at this point, I'm going to say no. I mean, either force people to vaccinate and put us in a lockdown, or the old freedom, you're on your own type trick.
Yeah. Okay, Pete, let's finish off with you, and then I'll go to the final segment. Go ahead.
You know, I read a story yesterday that some doctors now refer to the pandemic as a pandemic of the unvaccinated, because the only people that are really getting sick now are unvaccinated. Now, that should be enough reason for people not to still be unvaccinated, but it clearly isn't going to be. Now, they say Los Angeles County is roughly around 50% vaccination right now. So that means that if
that low?
Yeah, that's real. LA County is much lower.
Because California is a lot higher.
Yeah, well, LA is, California is somewhere like 71%. LA County is lagging behind it at 50%.
Or that's the biggest, that's a much bigger issue than.
Yeah. Well, so that's where I say to myself, if you're in a room with 10 people, five of those people are potentially carrying or could be carrying this Delta variant of the virus. And you know what? And most of the doctors say, you know, it more than likely won't affect you, or if it does affect you, it won't be adversely affecting you. But they also said so many different things over the last year and a half that they did not know, because this thing has evolved so much in the last year and a half that they've never been 100% sure. And I don't blame the doctors for it. I mean, they give you the information based on the science that they have at that moment. The problem is, if we didn't live in a instant moment where everything we want to know has to be given to us that second, we could have had this pandemic kind of be piecemealed out to us, where we wouldn't first hear that masks aren't important, and then hear masks are important, and then hear six feet's not important, then it is important. The problem we've had with this, and the problem that I would have with them mandating masks again, I mean, just let me make it clear, I am really all for them mandating the masks. But one of the problems I would have with it is, why did you stop in the first place? Like, the problem that we have is that we live in a society where there's a bunch of people that just don't care about anybody else. And I think it was said a couple of weeks ago when they were reopening everything here in California, that you'll know who hasn't been vaccinated by who's not wearing a mask when you go someplace. Because the people that are still wearing a mask are more than likely the people that have been vaccinated and have, taken care of themselves over the last year and a half. And the people that haven't are the ones who are running around without a mask on, and they're doing everything as if there never was a difference between February of 2020 and March of 2020. Like, the world has changed, and there are going to be changes that we're going to be living with for a long time to come. I don't believe we'll ever go back into a lockdown, because I think for so many reasons that just won't work. But to put on a piece of cloth on your face, even if it's for the most minute of chances that it's going to hurt, that not doing it is going to hurt you or somebody else, it seems like such a minor thing comparatively. I mean, yeah, it bothers me to wear a mask, especially when the hotter it's gotten. But
my glasses fog up all the goddamn time at work. It drives me nuts. But I do it. So there you go.
But that's like such a minor inconvenience compared to the realities of the situation. And you know what? And Stuart's right. I wish we could force people into getting vaccinated, but we can't. So what they should do instead is force people who aren't vaccinated not to be able to do things that they want to do.
Yeah.
You know, they seem to not like being told they can't go to a Foo Fighter concert if they're not vaccinated. So make more of those things. Mm-hmm. Make stores have to show your vaccination at a store. Yeah, sure. It might hurt business a little bit, but it's going to help business overall, because more people will go in the store. I still won't go in a place like a Best Buy or a lot of supermarkets because they're not requiring people to wear masks. But I might go to one of those places if they weren't, and if they were requiring masks to be worn. Yeah. So if they're going, if the least that they have to do is make people wear masks when they're indoors, it's not a civil liberties thing. It's not your freedom. It's nothing. It's just businesses protecting customers. I mean, they're protecting their staff. I don't know if anybody's been in a store or a restaurant yet where everybody working there wasn't wearing a mask, because I haven't.
Yesterday,
Pete, we went to the Apple store in downtown LA, and I don't know if you noticed, the workers weren't wearing masks.
Yeah, that was probably the first time I've seen.
That's the first time we've seen something. Yeah,
but it's one of those situations where I really think that, like, if the other options are so much worse, Yeah, like what if it got really bad and they did have to put us back into a lockdown? Well, okay, I don't think that's going to happen, but you just don't know. And if so, doing something so small as putting on a mask for a few more months, you know, if that could stem the tide of that, or even if it could just keep people around you safe in the event you're somebody that wasn't vaccinated gives it to you, and even though you can't get sick from it, you still can transmit it to somebody else. You know, it's peace of mind knowing that I'm not going to get somebody sick and they may die.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, even if they didn't get vaccinated, I don't want to kill them. You know, so it's like if that's the worst we have to do, then I'm okay with it, because the other options are so much worse. Making people constantly prove that they've been vaccinated is a pain in the ass. Mm-hmm. And that will start turning into lawsuits and rallies and problems. And you will see a governor who has no shot of being recalled get a little closer to the possibility of that happening if they did that. So just wear a fucking mask. I don't see what the big deal is. And I do think that they're kind of ramping up the conversation because they're going to re-announce it at some point.
Yeah, of course they are, because that's why I've been reading it everywhere today. I started reading it last night. And again, it just goes back to what I've been saying since like day one, and a lot of us have said it too here on the panel. If masks hadn't been politicized since day one, we would not be seeing this. I mean, there's still a lot of stupid people in this country, don't get me wrong, that still would be against it, you know. But like today on Facebook,
I'm arguing
with a guy on Facebook because he told, I answered a question on that ABC7, will you continue to wear a mask indoors? And all I did was I commented on there and I said, yes, it's a piece of fabric, not a big deal. I'm not going to whine. There's bigger issues that we have to deal with. And this guy basically told me, well, you know, your piece of fabric has been proven that it doesn't help you. You're just trying to please your government. And I said, and that's my point. You brought up the government, which is what I've been saying since day one.
And I'm sure
it's been politicized.
I'm sure that guy pleases his government when he doesn't drive 150 miles an hour on the freeway.
Yeah. You know,
and I'm sure he pleases his government when he doesn't go into a store and just pick something up and walk out.
Yeah.
I think Philip sent me the link before. I have to go back and finish reading it. But the libertarian town that was overrun by bears in New Hampshire, because no one wanted to follow the rule, any rules. And they were saying, hey, don't feed the bears. That brings them into town and they attack people and pets and things like that. And people said, I don't care. It's my right to feed the bears. If I want to, I'm going to continue to feed the bears. And like, then literally bears are roaming through this fucking town.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That reminds me of a story about how at Yellowstone, they have like really, they have trash cans, and a lot of people can't figure out how to use the trash cans because they're like harder to open than normal trash cans because of bears.
Yeah.
And the park rangers say it's because there's considerable overlap between the smartest bears and the dumbest people.
Good point.
I mean, look, those bears haven't made in that libertarian town. They probably think libertarianism is great. They're probably like, oh yeah, this is great. We get free food.
Yeah.
Then suddenly the bear laws got
bears,
the window. They're like,
the bear's center book is embarrassing bears. It's Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing that we live in a world right now. Everybody on this panel has got to have seen that Bugs Bunny episode where he's hiding the mobster in the oven, and he says, I wouldn't be hiding him in the oven, would I? Well, it's like, you know, the thing is, we live in that world now where the most obvious things are actually the real things. It's like the thing that we used to think was funny and it was a joke. I wouldn't tell you I was doing this if I was really doing it, would I? Well, no, that is the most obvious thing. And it is 100% what's happening in our world right now. We live in there's nothing but black and white. It's good and bad. And that's all it is. Masks bad, freedom good, you know, and it's just so fucking ridiculous, because at the end of the day, the longer that this goes on, maybe it's not going to be the Delta variant. Maybe it's going to be the Zeta variant. It'll be the one 12 more, 14, 15 more variants from now that evades all these vaccines. And you know what the problem is going to be? It's not that we're going to find out because a scientist is going to find it. It's going to be because people are going to start dropping dead again. And that's where I get frustrated, because it only takes something like this so long before it figures out a way around our defenses. You know, and that's what viruses do. That's why we can't get rid of the flu virus, because it changes every year when it figures out, oh, they figured out a way to beat me this year. So it comes back differently next year. And so, you know, the longer we fuck around with this, and the longer this thing lingers around, it will eventually get somebody that you know that did all the right things. And that's what sucks, because if it was just the people that weren't doing the right things, so be it. Good riddance. But that's not going to be the way it's going to work out. So if they got to make us wear masks again, I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, today too, I was reading that there was another study that came out that said that the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccination is actually going to, you know, last longer in us now, because I don't know if you guys read that.
They know that it lasts longer now.
That they proved that, you know, that it does last longer and that it does help protect us, you know, from the Delta variant. But again, like Pete said, might be other variants too that we don't know.
At a certain point, they can only know how long it lasts versus how long the first person that got it still has protection from. I think now is around, like, they already have started human trials now. So anything beyond now is like crazy, but like it could be like next year. They're like, well, the first people who got the vaccine are showing signs of it waning. I'm like, well,
for
boosters.
You won't know that. Like, what if the first group of people were smart enough because they were the kind of people that actually went in to be testers for this, that they've kept masks on, that they've stayed away from groups of people. So maybe it's not them that'll get sick. It's the people that got vaccinated 2 months later.
Well, I don't
become those people.
I would imagine for the first people that got the vaccine, they're doing some testing on those people. Like, people come in and voluntarily test. Yeah. That would be the smart thing to do. I imagine when they were choosing trial subjects for the vaccine, they avoided selection bias by selecting a variety of people who also have a variety of opinions on COVID and who have a variety of practices that way. So if they're doing the study properly, that shouldn't be the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I assume they did studies properly, but.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So this is our last week of shows until at least mid-August. So we thought that in these three final shows, we'd have our panel recommend things to watch, read, or listen during your summer vacation. So tonight we're starting with television. Are there any shows that might have fallen under the radar that people should watch this summer? Elizabeth.
I know it just ended its first season and it was pretty well talked about, but Hacks on HBO Max was fantastic. So funny, so good. That's one to definitely watch. I'm trying to think of other TV I've watched, but that was the one where I was like, oh, I gotta watch Hacks, like right now.
Okay. Anybody else? Pete.
I'm going to say the one that you and I loved from a few months back, The Serpent, which came to Netflix. It was on in the UK last year, but it came to Netflix, I think, 2 months ago. And it's, if you haven't seen it yet, it's fantastic. I mean, it's one of those kind of like edgier seat shows that you're constantly waiting for something bad to happen. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And so if you haven't seen it, definitely watch The Serpent. It's a great show.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good.
It's the definition of a binge watch show, because once you watch the first episode, you're like, okay, I can stay for one more episode tonight.
Mm-hmm. Stuart.
This is not a new one. I'm sure it's not the first time it's been recommended to you, but Ted Lasso is show. Genuinely one of the best shows I've ever seen. Also, Kim's Convenience, you haven't seen it, is also a phenomenal show.
I started watching it.
That show just ended. Mm-hmm. That show just ended, but it's really good throughout the whole thing. Definitely recommend it. Another one it's not like old, but it's been out for a couple of years, but it still doesn't get, I think, enough props, but Norseman on Netflix is a show that's shot simultaneously. They shoot one take in Norwegian and then one take in English, so you don't have to do subtitles or anything or dubs, and it's a workplace comedy but with Vikings. So it really is sort of just like The Office if they're all Vikings. So I would highly recommend watching it. It's very funny. If you like sort of history and stuff too, it's really, really funny. I would check that out. Sort of Monty Python-esque as well.
Okay, Danny.
For fans of Jurassic Park and Jurassic World, there's Jurassic World Camp Cretaceous on Netflix. It's a cartoon. I didn't think it'd be good. It's actually pretty good, and it's bingeable, you know, because it's actually really a different take, you know, on Jurassic Park, you know, having a camp, becoming a summer camp type environment for kids, and the kids get, you know, lost in there. It's pretty cool. I started watching this. I was trying to bring up the title, The World's Most Amazing Vacation Rentals, you know, for when we do get to travel. You know, they actually highlight some pretty cool places that are really affordable, and they give you options, which is what I liked. And if you like real estate and drama, I definitely recommend Selling Sunset. You know, it's really funny. These ladies are ridiculously dramatic, you know, but not in the Kardashian type of way. They actually make more sense, you know, and they pretty much sell homes around the Hollywood Hills and the Valley. And a lot of the places they go to for like happy hour or meetings or whatnot are places that locals go to. So I'm like, hey, I've been there. So it kind of gives you like that feel like, hey, I've been to some of these cool spots like the celebrities do. So yeah, those are my three.
Okay.
All on Netflix.
Elizabeth, and I'll go back to Stuart.
I have another one. It's been out, again, like a couple years now. There's, I think, a new season coming in the fall. What We Do in the Shadows, which is a spinoff from the movie that Taika Waititi directed and started. The show is just as good and goes so many different places. It's so fucking funny. I'm going to rewatch it finally because I love it so much. And like I said, there's a new season coming out. And it's like the faux documentary thing. But it's very, very funny and very well done, and it's just really good.
Okay. Stuart.
This is a more like reality TV, trash TV recommendation type of thing, but Alone, which is there's a couple seasons of it on Netflix. If you're feeling like depressed and stuff, it'll make you feel better because these people are having it worse. but it's basically they take a bunch of survivalists, put them in the Arctic, and see how long they can go. With like not giving them food or like, and they have to hunt and, you know, get their own food and water and stuff. And it's like for like a cash prize. And it's like sort of a super depressing that this is actually a thing that people do, but it's also like pretty cool. Cause like they're very skilled survivalists and like, this is like 10,000 years ago. This was life. So it's pretty cool to watch.
Go ahead,
and
Danny.
You can never go wrong with going onto the Paramount Plus, app and binge watching every season of Survivor.
It's like Survivor, but like they're actually like, it's not like they're filming themselves. They're like, it's incredible. Alone is, yeah, you should watch it. You'd like it, Danny.
It's classic, you know. Survivor's, I think, the best competition reality show ever made, and it kind of gets you excited for like season 41. So this last season was all winners. Season 40, definitely worth watching. And for our international viewers on Netflix, I recommend Elite on Netflix.
Oh, I want to start watching that one.
It's crazy, and it makes you grateful you didn't go to high school during these past few years, because high school nowadays is crazy.
Elizabeth?
I've got another. This one's obscure, and I stumbled across it by pure chance. I saw somebody mention it on Twitter, and I checked it out, and it was amazing. It's called The Foreigners, like the word before and the word foreigners together. And it's a Scandinavian show, so it is subtitled and stuff, but it's an amazing concept, and it's so well done. So basically, one day, and I think Oslo, people from the Viking era just show up in the water. Like they're just suddenly transported there. And like more and more numbers of that era, the Victorian era, and like Cro-Magnon early man.
That's incredible.
Just start arriving. Wow. And then suddenly, this is all in the first episode, suddenly it's 20 years later and there's a whole second class society. Some of them have assimilated, some of them live on the fringes. It's so interesting, and you're following a cop and the first ever like Norse Viking cop who's a woman who's his partner, and so they're investigating a murder, and there's a whole deeper mystery as to why they show up. So it was a big cliffhanger for the first season. There is a second season coming, I think later this year, early next year.
What is this on?
On HBO Max.
Or
HBO.
This show sounds like right up my alley.
It was so good. It's very, there's a great sense of humor to it though, but the dramatic stuff is good. Just a lot. It really, really was an incredible, like, well put together. All the plots are spinning and weaving together nicely. Highly recommend it.
You can guarantee Stew Dog's starting tonight.
I'm starting right now, man.
Yes.
He's like Vikings,
a Viking and a like a normal person as like a, and a buddy cop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's brilliant.
And the best part is the Viking is a woman, so she's like a tough like shield maiden. Viking.
I mean, yeah, but like just a Viking as a cop is just like mm-hmm. oh, like yeah. What could be better than
Viking
that?
Cop.
Yeah, Viking cop.
It's really interesting.
And if you want something really fun, you can always go on Facebook and binge watch all episodes of TMI Daily that you've missed the past year.
You can watch me slowly.
If you have Facebook, which I'm sure you do, because you're probably watching us, you can watch TMI Daily.
And they're a lot more fun when you're watching them.
You can watch old episodes of TMI Hollywood, too.
Yeah, on YouTube.
Yeah, really, yeah.
Sometimes we do the show without our pants on.
There you go.
You can see how Elizabeth gets upset over our summer movie bracket.
You can go back and revisit the brackets and see me really question everybody's tastes and choices in life. Because maybe if people weren't fucking up so early in the rounds, I wouldn't have to yell at everyone.
I don't have any like new shows, but the one that I just love and the last season just came out is The Kominsky Method. So even though Alan Arkin is not in the last season, I haven't started watching the final season yet, but it's such a great, great show. And also for our international fans, or if you like to read subtitles, Cable Girls on Netflix is one of the greatest shows I've ever
seen. Good. Yeah.
It's very, very good. It's about the first telephone operators in Spain in the 1920s. It has drama. It has history. It is fantastic. So highly recommended. It's really fun to binge it as well. And I'm going to start binge watching, finally, Better Call Saul. So as a Breaking Bad fan, I still haven't started watching.
I haven't either.
You haven't? Oh, really?
I didn't have AMC for a long time, so yeah. I haven't been able to, but I keep forgetting it's available.
I'm kind of behind with the whole Better Call Saul, but I have to watch it now before the final season comes out on AMC. So that's what I'll be binge watching. He doesn't like to binge watch shows with me because I go off.
He makes it a business. It's like my job.
I watch whenever I have time. That's the thing, you know? So, all right. Well,
I've been watching a season of TV in a day, like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, like especially if it's good. Like,
Lupin, the French show.
Sorry. It's second season is coming out in the next couple weeks for a couple really great things on Netflix, too. Never Have I Ever, which was so, so funny last year. It was the teenage girl. She's Indian, but her inner voice is John McEnroe. It was fucking hilarious.
I have that on my watch list, Elizabeth. It's what you recommended.
John McEnroe?
Yeah. It's
the tennis player?
Mm-hmm.
Funny.
Oh, my God.
It's really funny.
Who's never going to leave the house after this?
I know, but this is why it was so great, because I think, like, teenage girls are a lot angrier than people want to give them credit for. So it kind of, the John McEnroe voice fits with a lot of her like angst and frustration and how she butts up against things and fights with her mom and all those things. It's really, really funny. It's very sweet though, too. It's got a really good heart to it and good relationships and everything. So that's coming. And then I liked, I Think You Should Leave. The first season was really funny. And there's a second one coming out. That's a sketch show. Everyone's turning up their noses because I said a comedian sketch show. Sorry.
I didn't love it. A lot of people loved it. I didn't love it.
I liked it. I thought it was pretty good. So I'm curious to see what they do for the next one.
We have a recommendation from Todd, too. He says, if you like a show that makes no sense, Scorpion on Paramount Plus is awful, but in a funny way.
I remember the trailer for that. And the guy's a genius or whatever, and he meets Catherine McPhee at like a diner, and he says with the same level that you would basically tell someone that your child has like cancer, he goes, "I'm really sorry to have to tell you this, your child's a genius," and like that, like the kid's life is going to be impossible and horrible because they're like too smart. And I'm like, the fuck is this show? And I've never watched it.
speaking of Paramount Plus, I don't know how many people saw the show that was on CBS last year called Evil.
I've heard it's really good.
It was actually really good. I was surprised, like, you know, when I heard that they were making a show about like the paranormal by the couple that did The Good Wife, I was like, I'm not really sure that sounds like the best thing. But I watched the first couple episodes just out of curiosity, and I got hooked. It on it, and I guess the audience wasn't big enough for them to keep it on CBS, so they brought it to Paramount Plus for the second season, and it got released last week. I haven't watched it yet, but I'm definitely going to watch it. And if you haven't seen the show, watch the first season and then watch this one. It's actually really, really good.
Okay. Well, that is our show for tonight. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here again tomorrow at 6 p.m. Bye, everyone. Have a good night and stay safe. And if you're indoors, wear a mask. Bye. I didn't think I'd ever have to say that.